Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Nun Beit. And we just got finished discussing the story about the mean chamor that zoomed up a very, very chutzpahdik way and to cut off, Levi cut off his Rebbe, which was terrible. So he wanted to say something to calm him down. And meanwhile, we found out that he heard this halacha, which obviously he had known, but he wanted to, after all, to ask, as if he didn't know, so he would get him to say, to realize that it wasn't his fault. But this starts off the daf. That is that we said yesterday, your father said, halacha kichananya, and therefore your question doesn't matter because you want to know whether, since you've got such a bad chamor, it doesn't behave, are you allowed to put a stronger shmira on it? And he said, listen, your father quoted Shmuel as saying that the halacha is like Chananya, and Chananya holds that there's no such thing as too much Shmira. So that's called the Tiruta Yitirata, is not considered to be a Masui. That starts off our daf today. And we got up to the fourth line, Eish Shechakakla Ben Karnea Yotza Beafsar B'Shabbat. So the question is like this. Normally a goat is a little bit difficult to watch just with the typical afsar, which is where you just have sort of a halter. Because a normal halter is going to sit on the head. A goat, however, as you remember, is shaped with a very narrow kind of head. And if it starts up trying to escape and it moves its head back and forth, it starts really fighting you, then what's going to happen is it's going to fall off. The afsar is going to fall off. And nonetheless, it says over here that we're not concerned with that, and that it's yotza if, but only if, you made notches in the horns that are going to hold the afsar in place. Now, the reason for this, it turns out, this is the way the Marsha understands it. It's very difficult to learn any other way because we run into a problem, as we'll see. The reason for this is not because it's considered to be a shmirah that is insufficient if it wasn't done this way. Rather, it is actually considered to be a normal shmirah, because normally the goat doesn't act up that bad, and therefore people will go out with a goat like that during the week, and memela would not be considered to be a problem on Shabbos. The reason that here we're entering a specific question, legabe Shabbos, is because on Shabbos we have another issue. And it's fascinating that this is an issue that comes up with the question of what a woman is allowed to take out to wear. And that is the issue whether wearing something that may end up being carried is mut. So, for instance, suppose somebody has a pair of sunglasses. Now, he wants to wear those sunglasses, and obviously, there's no problem of it's being a baguette. It certainly is a baguette. It serves his body for shmirah of his eyes and so on. There should be no iser in walking out into Rosh Hashanah with sunglasses. The problem is that if these are not prescription glasses that he wears all the time, then when the sun goes behind a cloud, he's going to take off the sunglasses. If he puts them in his pocket and carries, then he's going to be carrying Arba Mitzvot Rosh Hashanah. That general type of issue is very, very nogea. Women wearing jewelry where they will often take off their jewelry while walking along, talking to a friend, look at what my husband just bought me, meanwhile carrying Arba Mitzvot Rosh Hashanah. Here is the first time that we've met this issue, b'nogea hotzah, and it's in this case of b'me behema yotzah. And that's because here we're worried that if, in fact, the goat does break away, then the owner's going to bend down and pick up his afsar, so not to leave it outside in Rosh Hashanah, and he may unthinkingly carry it with him till he catches the goat to put it back on. Something that happens very often if a wind blows off your kippah, for instance, in the middle of the street. So you pick up the kippah, you're walking along, and by the time you put the kippah on, you would have carried Arba Mitzvot Rosh Hashanah, if not for the fact that you're in a makom with a neiruv. And because of that, we would perhaps make a gezerah. So we said over here, we do make such a gezerah, and you have to have a chakika. Boy, Rav Yosef, tochav lo bezikna mahu. What about if you put the string through the goat's beard? Now, that's going to be very painful if it starts up. So, kivan di menatcha l'koyevla, if it starts pulling its head away, it's going to hurt. So maybe there's no problem of your concern that it's going to break away. Or the fact is that Zimnin Rafi, sometimes you don't put it in so tightly, and it's nafil, it could just fall on the ground, and then you may end up carrying it in the Rishus HaRabim. Okay, now, what would be the din? Halakha l'maisa. Do we go according to Hananya, that Netiruta Yiterata is not a problem or not? Now, before we can get into that, we have to get into another issue, which is the question of what is considered to be a level of decoration that would be considered to be a beged for a behema. And obviously, again, what would be a normal way for a behema, so to speak, to, quote, dress, unquote, would certainly be considered to be the equivalent of a beged for a human. And therefore, if this is something that is normally worn, then meaning not that I'm putting something on nice for Shabbos, you know, to give the animal a decorative look on Shabbos since I'm not going to be doing work with it, which was common, that would certainly be usher because it's not normally the way that the animal would go out. But what about something that is normally worn? So, okay. That is not considered to be a beged, and is not the same thing as a person putting on a special decorative thing on Shabbos, because a beged for a human has a different sense than a beged for an animal, obviously. Now, the Mishnah, we're going to see later on, the Mishnah says that a cow is not allowed to go out with a braid between its horns. Now, there's two reasons for putting a braid between the horns of a cow. One is that it's decorative, and that is certainly not something that is normal, because the cow has got jobs to do, and it certainly does not need to look pretty to be sitting out there attached to a plow or to be sitting in the barn giving milk and so on, and therefore it would be a little bit silly to make a cow decorated. So normally that would not be considered to be a beged. Now, the question over here is, what about if you put a braid between its horns in order to be able to grab the braid in case the cow misbehaves? And then that would be l'shamer. Now, normally, a cow does not misbehave, okay? And we're not talking about one of the Larson cows over here. We're talking about a standard cow. Now, obviously, we might be talking one of those weird cows that's got this whole plan of escaping and so on and so forth, which in the end, the Gemara will actually use as an answer to one of the cases. So, as I say, leka midi de lo remise biorita, so we even have the cartoons in the Gemara over here. But in any event, the question is over here, that there is a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Now, note that the whole thing that kicks this off was the fact that we happen to have overheard that Shmuel taina that halacha is kechananya. And that was quoted by Reb Yudah. That's what began the sugya yesterday, right at the top of the daf. So we know that there's a machlokas Rav and Shmuel as to how to understand the Mishnah. Chadamar ben lanoi ben l'shamer aser, v'chadam ben lanoi aser v'l'shamer muter. Is the Mishnah asering across the board any time that a cow is going to go out wearing a braid? Or would it only be usher if it's supposed to be a decoration, but if it's there in order for you to grab it and to control the cow, then it would be mutter. So now, based on what it is that we just heard, that according to Shmuel, the halacha is kechananya, said Rabbi Yosef, well, I know who said what. I can tell you that. You said one and one said the other. I can tell you which one. Because it must be Shmuel who was the one that said that it's mutter. Daniel, please mute. That must be the Shmuel Tzitzi Paskin like Hananya. He was the one that said that it's actually mutter, right? Because it was the one that was just quoted, the Omer of Huna Barchia Omer Shmuel Halacha Kechananya. So if the halacha is like Hananya, what's the problem? That the cow is generally well-behaved, and therefore why would you put a Ritzua Ben Karnea? What's the difference? If the halacha is like Hananya, the netiruta yiterata is not considered to be a problem. Eifel Rui is not considered to be a problem. And because of that, don't think, by the way, that there's an issue between the difference of netiruta yiterata in terms of going from zero, which would mean that it's an infinite change, so to speak, and a tiruta yiterata in going from one to two. Same thing. If a cow doesn't need any shmira whatsoever, then giving it shmira is nothing other than the tiruta yiterata. So therefore, must be that if you hold of Hananya, as Shmuel was quoted as saying, halacha kechananya, then it would be mutter to go out with the Ritzua ben Karnea, and when the Mishnah said it's usser, it meant it's usser in terms of noi, because we do not accept an unusual decoration as being at the getter of a beget. Omar le Abaye, I don't know why Moshe today has got his head facing the other way, but all right. Omar le Abaye, Adarabba, I would say just the opposite, because I can show you that Shmuel really would be the one who says it's usser even if it is l'shamer, because we had that Maisa, remember, of Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. This was Ravuna Barchia in the name of Shmuel, the Halacha Kechananya. But remember that we had the story yesterday in which they were sitting in front of Rebbe, and Rav Yehuda said that they asked Rebbe what would be the din if we switched the dromedary for the camel and the camel for the dromedary, right? So now, remember that the dromedary required a greater Shemira. You had to put a nose ring in because it's very skittish. So the question was whether you'd be allowed to switch the type of Shemira. And supposedly, what happened at that moment is that Rabbi Yishmael, but Rabbi Yossi told Rabbi, you should know that my father said that Arba Behemot Yotzot Ba'afsar, and they are the sus, the peret, the gamal, and the chamor. Now, what is the meaning of that? Since it says it beferish in the Mishnah, I mean, certainly some of them. So, I mean, why mention this? It must mean that only with an afsar, and not with more than an afsar, which means that if you attempted to use a chatam for a gamal, it would be usher, because that is too much netiruta. And this is Shmuel. Now, assuming that when Shmuel said this over, he was going along with it, so then apparently Shmuel Otz Netiruta Yeterata is usher. Now, the obvious problem over here, gentlemen, is the fact that when we brought that Gemara yesterday, we brought it along with the continuation. And the continuation was, no, that's not what it means. What it means is actually to tell me that you can't do it the other way. You can't do a lesser Shmira because that's considered to be a Masui Bialma because it doesn't really work effectively. And therefore, why is it on the animal, right? So how in the world are we suddenly saying, if the sugi yesterday ended with the opposite conclusion, how are we saying that it must be that this is the conclusion that Shmuel must have gone along with it? So there's a number of different approaches, okay? One, the way we explained it yesterday is the way that Tosfos understood the Gemara yesterday, which is that that was all part of the same story. So that this is what Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi said, was medayik from it, and Rebbe came back and said, no, it's not true. And therefore, Tosfos asks over here, so this Gemara doesn't make any sense. I mean, if that was part of the story, then it turns out that we ended up saying that we don't hold that it's a raya, that it's Yiruta Yitirata is usher. So maybe it just means that an Eshmirat, which is Pchuta, is no good. So others, because of this, don't understand the Gemara yesterday to be the way we said it. And that it was not that Rebbe had come back with that, and that this itself was part of what Shmuel was saying. Rather, the Gemara Stan was Deichet, not just the Amoraim that were sitting in the Beis HaMedrash. They were Deichet, that pshat says it's not a good Raya. But it's not that Rebbe related to it and he said something about it, or that Shmuel himself said something about it, which is the easiest way to understand it. I mean, if you're going to understand it like Tosfos, you're going to have to say something weird, you know, that Rebbe was just saying, come on, I mean, it doesn't mean anything. But it doesn't mean that he necessarily held it that way. A little weird. Okay, anyway, but it does turn out that the Gemara insists over here that apparently the story ended with that, and that the Mashmaut is that Shmuel held with Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi's father, and he held that Netirut Yeteraz is Aser, which means that he was paskening the opposite of Hananya. So why should you say that Shmuel said that we go according to Hananya? Let's go use this version and say that he holds against Hananya. Ooh, says Gemara, you're right. You know what? Forget about that. We should accept this pshat, and that apparently Ravuna Barchia, who quoted Shmuel as saying that the halach is kechananya, was wrong, and that he actually is not like Hananya. And why would we want to do that? Because usually, remember that the Gemara, when the Gemara quotes Rabbi Yehuda, Rav Yehuda is always quoted as a totally reliable source because he would always make sure to say over any suffik in the Girsa or between who he said it, suffik Mishmei Rav, suffik Mishmei Shmuel. So Rav Yehuda was very medayik. Okay, so it's probably Rav Yehuda was right. Wait a minute, says the Gemara, but there's a reason in this case not to go with that. I'll tell you why. Because my chazita de besamita mikameha, there's a good reason to actually knock out the Rav Yehuda's one and go according to the one that we said from Rav Huna Bar Chiya, because, I'll tell you why, I found a place where Shmuel himself said, Feresh, the Ashkan, the Shmuel who the Amar, Lenoy Asur, Leshamer Mutar. He said it himself, the Itmar. Rav Chiya Bar Ashi, Amar Rav, Bein Lenoy, Bein Leshamer Asur, and Rav Chiya Bar Omin, Amar Shmuel, that Lenoy Asur L'Shamer Mutar, which means that Shmuel, in fact, the version that we had before that Shmuel was Paskin Galib de Chananya, is correct. And therefore, apparently, we made a mistake in thinking that Shmuel was saying that Rebbe went along with this, and that he goes along with it, with the story of Arba Behema Siyotzi Bavsar. Forget about it. You assume that that's what it meant. Maybe the original version is correct, and that he went along with the way that the Gemara originally reported that you can't bring a raya from that. Anyway, the question is how Rav could taina that Netiruta Yeterata is considered to be usur because it's a matsui. What does Rav do with the following braita? Kishara ba'aleh b'mosera kishera. Here we're talking about a para aduma. A para aduma ought to be like any other cow. It's a nice, placid cow. It does not require shmira, which is what we said over here is the problem. And forget about the issue of whether it's considered to be a masui on Shabbat shmira yitirata. A para aduma that carries something is pasul for being a para aduma. Over here, you've got millions of dollars to lose based on the machlokas of whether netiruta yitirata is shmira or not. Because if you put this thing on a para, a duma, it's not worth anything anymore because it was carrying around this braid between its horns that it did not need because it was not necessary to be shomer it. And yet the Braita says that if somebody puts on one of these things on a para, a duma, it's not a problem. If Nidiruta Yeterata is considered to be a masui vis-a-vis Shabbat, then it would be considered to be a masui vis-a-vis para aduma. And therefore, it passes the para aduma. And Isaac, I took masuyu. Doesn't the Torah say, Asher lo Allah aleha ol, that a para aduma that carries something of any kind of work is possible? Omar Abaye, there's an answer for Rav. I say the answer is that it's talking about over here where we're taking the para aduma to a different city. And when do we say that a cow normally behaves? It behaves because it's used to its pattern. So it will always go back to where it was. It'll walk back into the barn. It's used to that and so on. But if you attempt to take a cow to a new place, then the original program that it's used to going back to where it goes kicks in, and you have a problem in dragging it to this other city to which it doesn't want to go because it's programmed to go back to where it always goes. So over there, it's the norm to need to be able to control the para, any para, and therefore, if a para aduma is wearing something between its horns, in this particular case, we're taking it somewhere else, it's not considered to be a masui, and therefore, you're not over asher lo aleh ol. Rava says, how can you compare a para aduma to a normal cow, for heaven's sake? A para aduma is worth $10 million. Obviously, I'm going to rely on the fact that generally cows are placid. Oh, come on, man. Not when they're worth $10 million. So in that case, certainly I want to control that para aduma more than I want to control a normal cow. I would ask Calvin to give a call to Mr. N and find out what is going on, not to mention La. What in the world is happening over there with you guys? Okay, and if Calvin can't do it, certainly the BBs can do it. Yeah. And I know a younger BB who can really sock it to him. Okay, so moving on. That's one answer. So we got two answers so far. And the third answer is we're talking about a cow who is a Ben Sorero More. This is a bad cow. And this bad cow indeed, who misbehaves does need a braid in order to, for me to be able to grab a hold of it when it starts misbehaving. So we're talking about a moredet. Okay. So this is a Gary Larson kind of para aduma. Getting back to the Mishnah. So we were talking about wearing a sher. A sher is a bracelet of some kind. And we said any animal that normally goes out with a collar is yotzin v'nimshachim. Now, that seems a little bit weird. What do you mean yotzin v'nimshachim? I mean, isn't the whole point of the sher, if it's supposed to be a way of keeping the animal shamur? So, of course, the reason that I'm wearing it is so that I should be able to grab the animal and pull it by its collar. I mean, to say it's yotzin v'nimshachim is somewhat redundant, wouldn't you say? Shmuel Amar. Shmuel says, Amar v'na, it means like this. That there are two different elements of walking along with an animal with a collar. One aspect is that the collar is there around its neck, and you can grab the collar. But the other aspect is that you can hold a rope that generally is inserted through a ring in the collar, and that rope is hanging down, and you can grab the rope. Now, the question is, according to the Mishnah, the Mishnah, by repeating the word yotzim v'nimshachim, seems to be saying, as about Chokas Rashi and Tosfos here, it seems to be saying that there's two ways that that collar can be used as a shmira. One is that the rope that might have been hanging loose is put around the neck, around the collar, with the collar, so that it's available as necessary. But if the animal walks around with that rope, and so you cannot really immediately do a shmira with it, it's still mutter because it's considered to be decorative, since that's normally the way that you would walk during the week. And therefore, wasn't something that is unusual, and it's considered to be a beged anyway. That's how Rashi learns. So that what basically Rav Huna is saying is that there's a choice what it means. It could go out or it could be pulled, meaning it could go out with the rope wrapped around the collar and therefore not immediately usable for Shmira, but it would be mutter because of Noi, or it could be Nimshachim by allowing the rope to be loose, and then you could grab the rope, and the rope would obviously be a correct Shmira. Tosis understands that Kruchin does not mean that there's no Shmira whatsoever. It doesn't. What kind of noy is that to wear a rope around your neck? No, what it means is that since you could slip your hand between the collar and the neck of the animal and grab the collar and the rope, that is considered to be sufficient in terms of the shmira, alibid Rav Huna. Whereas Shmuel says, no. It's one statement. What it's saying is yotzin only if it's nimshachin, meaning only if there is a rope sticking out. But if you had wrapped it around the neck of the animal, that is not considered to be, according to Tosfos, any level of shmira, or according to Rashi, an acceptable noi. And the Braita said, what it means is yotzin kruchin lima sheikh. So it means that you're allowed to have it wrapped around the neck, as long as it's loose enough to be able to pull it, or it would mean you'd left enough of the rope to be able to grab the rope. And therefore, since the Braita says this, is because of that, the Tosfos had to come out with that shot in Rav Huna, because otherwise Rav Huna would have been going against the Braita. I mean, how could he say, even if it was wrapped around tight, the way Rashi's learning it? The Braita says, beferish, it has to be yotzin, loose enough to be able to be limashech if you want to. So because of that, Tosfos says, no, Rav Huna never meant to justify it being only noi. He was just into justifying if you have enough space to grab it with. Okay, anyways, we've got three different approaches. Amar Rav Yosef. I could tell you personally that I saw the agalot in Rav Huna's house going around with the afsar rolled around their necks on chop. So he apparently did not hold that that's a problem. And Rav Dimi quotes Rabbi Hanina as saying that the mules, it's interesting, they have over here the Aramaic word mulaot, which is like a mule in English. And Rashi says it means a mule. Mulaot. Shel Beit Rebbe yotzot b'avsareim b'shabbat, that they used to go out with the avsar on Shabbos. Now, when Rav Dimi said that, what did he mean? He's not giving us enough information. We are wondering, did he mean they could go out even kruchin, or did he mean only that they could go out nimshachin? I mean, that's the big issue that we want to know, and he sits there dangling it in front of us, and we don't know whether there's enough of a string to grab onto. Tashma? Well, it must be. I'll bring you a raya. When Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda came from Eretz Yisrael, he quoted Rav Chanina, that Rav Chanina said that those mules that Rav Dimi was referring to, they went out, Bafsarim Kruchim. He said, Beferish, it was even with the rope around the collar. It wasn't a problem. So they said over this whole story over here about Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda coming from Eretz Yisrael, they said it to Rav Asi. Rav Asi says, what's with you guys? You don't need to hear this from Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda. What's the matter with you? What do you think Rav Dimi was saying, for heaven's sakes? Explain it to me. Rav Dimi said, I saw the mulot shel Rebbe that they were going out. Yeah. And you say, well, I don't know. Did he mean kruchin or not kruchin? Obviously, he meant their kruchin. Because Isaac, that Rav Dimi nimshachim ka'amar, if all that Rav Dimi was trying to say is that they went out with a string that was hanging down, then he's not saying anything. Because I already know that from the story of Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, which was the whole story, that Machlif and Zubazu in front of Rebbe, and we had Rebbe Shmuel Rebbe Yossi saying over Arba, Ayotze, Asus, Aperla, Gamal, Vachamor, and apparently Rebbe went along with this, so it must be that he would allow a pered, which is a mul, a mulaot, to go out. So what was Rav Dimi saying? I don't need Rav Dimi to tell me something that I already heard over from Rebbe Yossi and Rebbe Yehuda Amar Shmuel, but the story. Unless he was adding, I saw that they actually went out with being wrapped. Because that we didn't discuss before. I don't need Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Amalur Rav Asi, it's not true. You do need it. Because let's say you only would have known this story about Rav Shmuel ben Osher Rav Yossi, about Arba Behemos. You don't have any right to assume that Rebbe went along with that. Maybe Rebbe wasn't mekabel that. Comes along Rav Dimi to say, no, you should know. Rebbe accepted the fact that it's okay to go out with an afsa. If it's according to, I only had what Rav Dimi said, I saw him go out with an afsa, I could have said that only if the afsa was nimshach. How do I know that it was even kruchin? I wouldn't have known that. Comes along Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda to say, no, that was the whole point that Rav Dimi was making. Rebbe had gone along with the story of Rebbe Yossi, Rebbe Shmuel. And I even saw him take it one step further, and that is that he was matur not only an afsar, but an afsar that was wrapped around the neck. Okay, coming now to the next question in the Mishnah. And this, of course, involves us very deeply in all the Mishnayos that we've learned before in Kalim. And the question over here is, as a matter of fact, it's very connected to the Mishnayos that we just had. Because what we just learned recently was the question of what would be the din if you took apart a bed. Can you be betired aver, or must you pull it apart so that the water gets into every single piece? Because otherwise it would be considered to be a chatzitza. Now that seems to be very nogea over here in the Mishnah that says that you could sprinkle on the shear and you could be tevel it, and it's not considered to be a mechatzitza just because you have the rope in the hole or the ring in the hole, which prevents the water from getting entirely into the halter, because that part where the ring is tight. So we're going to get into this now. Okay, so the Mishnah now, the next thing in the Mishnah was, you can sprinkle the paraduma in situ. What was the problem over there? Remember that the problem was that if any of the water had first been sprinkled and missed, and instead it went onto the cow itself, then the water would have been puzzle for further hazoya, in which case, if you sprinkled again and you hit the collar, it wouldn't help. So the question over here is, are we choshesh for that event? So the Mishnah is saying, no, you're not choshesh for that event. We're assuming that the guy can do a hazoya properly directly onto the collar. But the question over here is, why in the world would a share around the neck of an animal be mekabel tuma? What about the Mishnah in Kalim, way back in the 12th parak? It said over there that, asked the Gemara, are they b'nei kibul tuma? Vatnan, the Mishnah in Kalim says that a tabat of a human that he wears on his finger, that is tummy. But a tabat that was made for a behema or for Kalim, let's say like a ring you put on the door just to make it look pretty, that is not considered to be decorative, because by the, what's the mocker of learning decorations? Remember when we learned the Mishnah? The mocker is clay midyan. We're over there. It talks about all these beautiful decorations that women wear, that sami, that sadat, so on. And it lists them, but it only lists human decorations. It doesn't list jewelry for animals or for doors. So a kli that is meshamish a kli is not considered to be a kli maaser, or a kli that's meshamish a behema is not considered to be a kli. So why would a ring around the neck of an animal be tameh? If it says beferish in the Mishnah and Kelim, they are tahorot. Rav Yitzchak, Rav Yitzchak Nafka said, let me tell you, that is about a ring that is made for an animal. How about a ring that was made lechatchila for a human? In this case, it was a bracelet. It was made for a human. The BBs are looking a little bit too comfortable, and that means they're not paying close attention. They even have time to whisper to each other, thinking that just because they're muted, it's good enough. Okay. Don't think that Big Brother isn't watching through those cameras. All right. So, now Gavi figured out that we realized he was fast asleep. Good. Welcome home. So now the question is, if originally you had made this as a bracelet for a woman, and then you decided to put it around the neck of your cow, okay, I guess your wife wasn't too happy with it, but in any event, it was originally made as a human decoration, and because of that, it would be Mekabel Tumah. So it came from Noy Adam L'Noy Behemer, Rav Yosef says. No. There's a whole other issue over here. Is this bracelet around the neck, which we now call a collar, is it not used by an Adam for shmira, for grabbing onto it? So then it's an Adam's kli. Forget about it. It's serving the animal. The Adam needs this to be Moshech Behemet HaBehema. Milo Tanya, doesn't it say Beferish in the Braita? It also says that it's a question why it says Tanya, because the Rosh Hash points out this is actually a Mishnah that we had in Kalim as well. A makel shel behema, where you have this makel that you use in order to, Rashi says, that you may use it to get a bear to perform, you know, in case you have a bear in your backyard, which, by the way, is becoming very common now that Arov has found its way onto the scene, besides Dever and Arba, which we've had a lot of, as all of you have seen the YouTubes. So now a lot of people have bears in their front yards. It might be kedai to buy one of these things, according to Rashi's pshat, a makel shel behema. So if it's made out of metal and it's not pshutei kliyot, it would be tamei. Why is that? Because a person needs it to be able to get his animal to move. So el v'adam rodem b'hem, it's considered to be a clay adam. It's a clay mice. It's not considered to be something for the behema. So then that would be true about a collar. Hakanami, el v'adam asher b'hem. Don't you use it to drag the animal? Absolutely. Okay, what about the next issue about putting it into a mikveh while it's still around the neck of the animal? Isn't that a chatzitza? And what would the chatzitza be? The fact that I've got the ring or the rope that goes through the hole in the share, and that prevents the water from getting in. Aha! Asks Tosfos, that's Rashi's strat, asks Tosfos from the Mishnah we just had in Kalim. And what about a bed that's got its legs stuck in tight to the piece of the headboard that they were attached to? And we said over there that you could still put them in the mikveh and it's not considered to be a chatzitza because that's the kli as it functions. You certainly make the whole bed together, put it into the mikveh. So over here, why can't you put this whole thing into the mikveh? Therefore, Tosis learns the problem is that if the collar is tight, then the water can't get around the collar because the neck of the animal prevents the water from getting around. And that's the problem. As we know, to try to learn Masechet Shabbos without Masechet Kelim, you got to be crazy. Okay, so isn't this a chatzitza? Omer Ravami, what it's talking about over here is that you hammered it. So you hammered it out, and that spread the hole. So in order to get it from your wife onto the cow, and this is why your wife wasn't that upset, because she wasn't that fat, so what you had to do is you had to bang it out, right? And that spread it. So when it spread it, it also spread the hole. So then, either according to Tosfos, that's according to Rashi, according to Tosfos, it means it was just loose because you had hammered it to make it wider. So wait a minute. That doesn't work. That only works according to Rabbi Yosef. Remember, Rabbi Yosef said that if you're using a collar on an animal, it's considered to be a real kli for a person and not for the animal. But Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka's approach was that it was originally designed for your wife. And then the problem is, if you hammered it out to now fit the animal, then you would be doing a maisa to make it a kli that's not mekabel tuma. Ha ha. Because the only reason, and according to Rabbi Yitzchak Mafka, was mekabel tuma was because originally it was meant for a human, and you haven't changed anything in putting it on the animal. But if you change something, and now you do a maisa to change it, so now you took off its shame kli, because now you made it a kli for a behema. And he said it's boy me noy adam lenoy behema. So then, even the return, if you actually hammered it out, so then you did a maisa. And remember the famous Mishnah, which we're getting to very soon, but the most famous Mishnah of Kalim from all of Shas is that kol ha-kelim yordim lidei tumatam b'machshava, that the moment you decide to use something, let's say you have a hide of an animal, the moment you decide that you're going to use this as a sheepskin rug, even though you didn't do a darn thing to it, it's automatically going to be kabel tuma. But then if you decide, I don't really need another sheepskin rug, I want to actually tan this, and I want to use it for shoelaces or something, right? So then the idea is they're not only mitumatan unless you do a maisa. But once you do that maisa, which over here you're claiming you were ritchan, pow, you just ruined it. So then it can't work out according to Rabbi Yitzchak Mafka, right? At least what Rabbi Ami said. Not necessarily, because suppose Rabbi Ami holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that when we're talking about doing a maisa, which changes something, you know what it was like? It was like if you took a pair of scissors, or an ismail, as the case in the Mishnah, and you started cutting the skin so that now it would be usable to make a shoe out of, or to make a shoelace out of. That is considered to be a maisa, because you're ruining what was originally its use as a sheepskin rug. But if you do something that makes it more usable, that's not considered to be a maisa. And over here, it's more usable vis-a-vis the behemoth. It's more usable, and that's not a maisa to take away tuma. And lo amar shinoi maisa l'takein, they only said a shinoi maisa, which is mekalkel. And this is a tikkun. A braita gives a very simple solution. It's talking about mechulalim. So Rashi learns mechulalim means it has a very wide hole in the first place, and therefore water could get in it, which is an obvious answer. But Tosfos says we didn't want to say this because that's not the normal way to make a share. So it's only if you got nothing else to say, you could say mechulalim. If a Tana said in a braisa, fine, I'll accept it. Anyway, there was one of these Talmidim that came from the Galil Elyon, and he asked Rebbe Eliezer, I was learning that there was a difference between one kind of ring and another kind of ring, and I do not recall what those differences are. What differences there are in what kind of ring? So Rabbi Eliezer said to him, no, you're getting mixed up. We're learning Kalim, man. You've got your head in Shabbos. What's the matter with you? Maybe you're getting mixed up from something that you heard about Shabbos. Because, I mean, if you're talking about Kalim in terms of the dinim of Tumah, one kind of ring is like any other kind of ring. A ring is a ring is a ring. Wait a minute, says the Gemara. What do you mean a ring is a ring is a ring? Well, what about the Mishnah in Kalim? A tabat adam is tamei, a tabat aim of a kalim v'shakol tabat a torot. How can you say a ring is a ring is a ring? No, come on. I mean, he was talking about rings that people wear. All the Rebbe Eliezer was saying is there's no difference between a human ring when it comes to tumah. Really? Last I heard is that there's a big difference because it says in a braita, tabachit kinalach korba mutnab. Suppose you took a ring and you turned it into something to be able to use as Rashi actually says the word bukla, a buckle. So you made a buckle out of the ring. So now you're going to be able to use it as part of a belt to keep your pants up. Or maybe lakasha babek tefav, or you put it something that you could keep your sleeves up when you're working out in the field so it'll keep going down and getting dirty. That is considered to be tohar. That's not going to be mikabel tuma as a normal ring, because it's a ring that serves kalim. And remember, a kli that is used for other kalim is not considered to be a kli, unless we have the special cases back in Masechet Kalim, where it's going to be used all the time, ben shalah, when the person is doing melakto, when he's not doing melakto, fine. But the only type of ring that we were talking about was a finger ring. So etzba bilva, yeah, that's what Rabbi Eliezer meant. Not human rings, but human finger rings. A human finger ring is a ring is a ring is a ring. That's what he meant to say. Okay, if you say so. But even that isn't true. You're telling me that human finger rings are always the same and are going to be mekabel tuma? And what are you going to do with the Mishnah and Kalim that we just had, which is if the ring is made out of metal And the signet part is made out of almog. Now, almog is coral, but remember that the Mishnah considers coral to be the same as din, as eitz, and therefore be pshute kli eitz if the ring was made out of almog. But if the chotmah is almog, since the tabat itself is metal, that's the main thing that defines it's mekabel tumah. But if the ring itself was almog, then it would be pshute kli eitz. And even in those, Tosis points out, well, what about the place to insert signet? Isn't that a beit kibul? He says, no, because a beit kibul that is meant to be filled up permanently is not called a beit kibul. So obviously a ring is not a ring is not a ring, huh? It depends whether it's a signet ring and what way it's constructed. Yeah. What he was saying was, of course, that all human finger rings made out of metal are all the same, and therefore you're confusing your Shabbos din. Okay, fine. Over there is a difference whether something is a signet ring or not. Legabe hotzah on Shabbos, whether it's considered to be decorative or whether it's considered to be business, that we'll see later on. Okay. The old child, then he asked him another thing. He said, I also heard that it makes a difference what kind of needle you have. Now, remember that a needle in English is not precisely machat in Hebrew, because a machat does not necessarily mean a needle like a sewing needle that's got a hole for a thread and it's got a point on the other end. A machat basically means a pin, a straight pin. Now, sometimes you can use it as just a pin. Sometimes you can use it as a needle. Sometimes you can use it as a shaped pin that on one side it's dull, on the other side it's sharp. All of these would be called needles. So therefore, when he said, I heard there's a difference between one kind and the other, oh my God, says Rebbe Eliezer, you got your head back in the second Shabbos again. We're trying to learn Kalim over here. You must have just been learning Shabbos. Shemelo Shamata Lanin Shabbos? Because if you're talking about Kalim, all needles are the same. One needle's the same as any other needle. Don't give me a hard time. What? One needle's the same as any other needle? My God, what happened to all of the Mishnayos in Kalim? Didn't we learn out that a macha chenital chuda or ktsat ora? That if somebody is not muting, if you go ahead and you take off, it lost its head or it lost its point. Rashi says a point is a pointer. It can't become tummy anymore. And only a full needle is considered to be makabel tumah. So what do you mean a needle is a needle is a needle? No, Rebbe Eliezer meant a whole needle is a needle is a needle. Really now? A whole needle is a needle, is it? And what about the other Mishnah in Kalim? Well, it's really the same Mishnah, actually. Doesn't the Mishnah say that if a needle got rusty, and it's so rusty that you can't really do the sewing with it, then it's tar, but if not, it's tummy. By the way, what is considered to be so rusty? Army Deve Rebyan, I remember that we spoke about this in the Mishnah, Vuhushari Shuma Nikar. So there were two ways of understanding that. Some learn that the rust is so bad that it always leaves a stain in the sewing, and therefore it's unusable. And others learn Rishuma Nikar means the rust is so bad that it's like growing around the needle. And what we're talking about over here is that if I could still make out the clear-cut usable needle in there, so then it's still considered to be a kli. Okay, in any event, there's definitely a difference between one needle and another needle. No, he meant there's no difference between a nice, clean needle. That's what he meant. Unless you're talking about Shabbos, which over there we'll see there is a difference about carrying. Because if a needle is as a pin, so then it's considered to be decorative because women stick it in and they make decorations with it. But if not, if it's a sewing needle, then ein chinami, it would be considered to be hotzah. But ask the Gemara, is that true? That even a nice shiny needle, it's all the same? And what about the brisa in Kalim? Machat bein nekuva bein einan nekuva mutar letaltala b'shabbat velo amrin nekuva lo ninyan tumah bilvad. That's exactly the opposite. Legabe Shabbos, it doesn't make any nafkamina. And legabe tumah, it does make a tremendous nafkamina, because if it doesn't have an ability to be used for doing something with it, it's not considered to be a kli maisa. So even a nice shiny needle is not the same. But you forget. Abai already explained that braita was going aliba de rava, was referring to gome, needles that are golem, meaning that I just came out of the machine, in which it's cutting just raw pieces of metal, and it needs to go through a final stage of stamping it out so that it can be used for what it was being made for, which was as a sewing needle, and it didn't yet go through the part that makes the hole, that makes the point. That's what it's referring to. So over there, it makes big nafkamina because that's what it means, that it's not yet gemar keli. And without it being a gemar kli, it's not going to be makabel tuma.